Well, it's going to be an interesting day. It is the news, according to me. Good Monday morning. It is Monday, January 5th at 9:56 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in the Central Time Zone right now. Not where I was thinking I was going to be this morning. I thought I was going to be traveling all morning trying to get to Appleton, Wisconsin is where I was going to end up tonight. However, this is not the case. I'm close to, well, Destin, Florida, Pensacola area, between Destin and Pensacola, in that area. And that's where I'm at right now. And it looks like I will be here all week, partially due to the sickie. I'm a little sicky. I decided just to stay here in this area because I have a little, you can tell. I'm a little congested. I have a little issues with my sinuses and my, you know, just stuff going on, and decided I would not be traveling during this time. Just wouldn't be good. I was feeling much worse a couple days ago, just very achy and just kind of like a super cold kind of thing going on. I don't know what I had, but I probably had COVID. Who knows? In the meantime, I just decided to, I'm kind of on the mend now, but I still have a pretty serious sinus thing, and I just didn't want to go back to traveling around and that kind of thing. It tends to cause more issues with, you know, just not getting any rest, and it just extends the problem, or it can come back. So I decided to just hang out here, relax, chillax a little bit here in the Florida area. It's not necessarily very warm outside. It's currently, I believe, the temperature outside here is 55 degrees. A little chilly here. However, it should be getting up into the, let's just see what the weather's going to do here today. I think it's going to stay pretty nice, and I think we're supposed to get at least sunny conditions, I think. It looks like cloudy, but however, it's not all that cloudy right now. It looks like it's supposed to stay cloudy and get up to a high of 65 degrees today, which is better than back home in my hometown. Actually, it's not going to be that bad in my hometown. This kind of gets frustrating when you come down here 1,000 miles away, and it's only a 20 degree difference. It's about 30. We're supposed to get to 40 degrees at home today. And this week, as the week goes on, it's going to be rainy and cold and rainy, which is, that's my, the worst kind of weather for me is cold, wet rain. I don't know why. I hate that. I don't like that as much. I'd rather have snow. First, frankly, I'd rather have some snow and cold, or just cold. If it's cold and rainy, that's more miserable to me. I can't do anything in that kind of. I don't want to go outside. I don't want to do anything outside. When it's snowing, I don't mind being outside. When it's cold, I don't mind being outside. I can dress for that. But when it's cold and rainy, I just don't want to get wet in the rain. And it just seems like it's just a miserable experience. Can't work on anything outside. Can't do anything outside much of anything. Just a real, real, very frustrating. Anyway, a lot of things going on in the world. One of the biggest things going on in the world is what's in my cup. I have some chai here, some Big Train chai, and it's very good. And I have of course, coconut cream creamer in there. Oh, I forgot to take all of my vitamins. I forgot some of my vitamins over there. and I have in my backup cup, I have some water. I don't have sweet tea. However, that's just ice water. Very good water. It's good with some good water. I'm trying to get a reverse osmosis system. I'm going to be putting that in this week in the camper. I was going to try to put it in last week. And of course, came down with not feeling very well, headache, sinus, facial headache kind of thing, you know, this whole sinus thing. And just wasn't feeling good enough to do it. And then when I decided to take some sick time, I decided I would just kind of relax and not do anything. I'll do it this week when I'm on the mend, and we'll get that all taken care of, get that thing installed. I think it's going to be a fairly straightforward installation, I think. We'll see how it all goes once I get the plumbing run, which I think is not going to be too big of an issue. I've turned the water off anyway. There's some other things I want to work on, so I'll be doing some of that. We have an issue with our hot water system, our water heater. if water flows too fast through it, there's a little thing inside the thing. It's stopping the flow completely. It's like I can hear it clicking in there. It's almost like a check valve. However, it's not designed to have a check valve in it. But that seems to be what's happening with it. And I don't know if it does have an overpressure valve. It's not functioning properly. I don't think it has anything like that in it. I think it's just some kind of debris, a fitting of some kind that is somehow is doing something that's not supposed to be doing. So I don't know if we need to put a new one in there or just, the water heater itself is fine. Works great. It has a gas and electric system in it, which is great. However, I don't think, I want to, it's almost unusable at times. Because you have to kind of be careful, really careful with the water pressure, how much you turn it on. You can't turn on the hot water too fast or that thing flows too quick and then it stops the water altogether. So it's just, yeah. Anyway, and of course we've got an ice maker in the background. That's been working great. So, needless to say, after all that, we have a couple. Again, of course, there is a sweet tea, by the way, in my future. There's a Chick-fil-A. We moved over the weekend from our other location over in closer to Gainesville, just west of Gainesville, Florida, and we are now in this area. And it's much more rural, residential, I should say. There's a residential area. There's two Walmarts. We're kind of between two Walmarts, and there's a Chick-fil-A that's about a 10-minute drive from here. So we'll take the Jeep out, do some buzzing around, maybe look at some, do some exploring. And we're much closer to the water here in terms of the Gulf. Very close to a military base, actually, here. So we will do what we can to get out and get some sweet tea today. That'll be a priority. Might buy a couple of large sweet teas just to make sure I have enough for the week. Dogs are with us, of course, and puppy's finally settled down. He was barking a little bit there at first, but they've had breakfast. They've had their little walk in this morning. We're going to take a longer walk in a little bit. That's the news for me. The smaller news in the world is we invaded Venezuela, in case you didn't know. A couple other things. Some other things are happening. I've heard rumor today that now Governor Walz in Minnesota, Governor Walz, is not necessarily going to step down as governor. He was going to run for another office, run another term. Most states have term limits on governorship, and he apparently, they're apparently in Minnesota that has no term limits, and he was going to run for another one. I think he's been in for two terms, and I think he's running for a third. And he was poised to win it, of course, because, you know, well, there was all the money flowing up there. Strangely enough, how he would, you know, potentially win that is, you know, just amazing. But then there's the issue of, and by the way, this guy has said some things. I'm trying to compile some audio of this guy because he said some things that I think, some quotations that just kind of underpin what I think I've said about this guy for a long time. To comment about him. I think he's going to step down from the race. He's going to withdraw from the race for governorship in, well, I think it's 2026 is his, I think that this year is his, the election, I think is in November. He's withdrawing from the race. Now, Lindell, the Pelo guy, my Pelo guy, he apparently is in the race, I think. I think he has officially entered the race for governorship of Minnesota. He may, now, if Walz would have stayed in, Lindell would be the new governor. And Lindell's the kind of guy they need to get in there. He understands business. He understands Minnesota. He understands people. The guy, you know, he's radically committed as a Christian. However, he's extremely business minded. Understands business. It's just in. You know, running a pillow company, you'd think, you know, just, but believe it or not, the guy is actually he's a very common, salt of the earth guy, at the same time, very brilliant in terms of his, and he's got the kind of background that you want. He's come from nothing. He came from an addicted past, all kinds of issues, to being the success that he is today. This is a guy who has just done a phenomenal job with building a team, building a company. People who work there at his company love working there. You don't see people walking out. You don't hear complaints from anybody working there for that guy. He's kind of same kind of business mind mindset, and has a very good, I think, rapport with people in general. Unlike Governor Waltz, is an issue. The issues I was talking about, the way he talks, he talks in parentheses. I call it parenthesis talk. It's very hard to see anybody that talks or hear anybody that talks like this. It's hard to find. Now, occasionally, I will do this. I will make a comment, and I will underpin it with a quick comment about something else that's related. Now, it's different than a bunny trail. It's different than a rabbit hole. It's different. It's different than anything like that. A sidetrack kind of squirrel type issue. It's different than going off on another subject. This is where you're talking about something, and underneath this, while you're talking, sorry, I had to have some water there. While you're talking, you have this thing where you make another comment, complete comment underneath that comment. And he even changes his voice, his vocal tone when he says it. And he comes back up to talk again. And I'm compiling some stuff together. Whenever he's being interviewed or asked questions, he does this continuously. He does this kind of thing. Whenever he goes on a long rant where he's trying to explain something, he just starts engaging and he will talk. It's like a shotgun kind of thing. He'll have five different subjects that he's speaking about in one paragraph, and within that time, he's underpinning everything with parentheses of all kinds of other snide comments. I call them snide, just other comments beyond the actual subject he's talking about. So he'll talk about 12 different things in one particular response to something. When you start analyzing what he's actually saying, you sit down, if you had to read the transcript of what he's saying and try to figure out what did he actually say here? He says nothing. Well, he says a lot of things. Nothing that means anything and nothing that relates to anything. He never answers the question when he's asked a question. One of the most frustrating things, I think, for an interviewer, and of course, it sounds like he gave an extensive answer. Now, this is the same kind of thing. Mamdani does this a little bit differently. Mamdani, of course, but we're going to talk about him in a little bit because we'll talk about him now. Let's just change gears right now. Move on to this whole thing about Venezuela. We apparently have invaded, and we're bombing Venezuela. Apparently, right now we're bombing Venezuela. All the radicals around the world have risen up and said, stop bombing Venezuela, stop the bombings, stop the bombing. There was only a few missile attacks, only to take out military structures, mostly radar facilities, anti-aircraft facilities. That's all there was. It's over. It's over. The kinetic action has stopped there in Venezuela. We're not at war with them. We captured, we went in, got the target, left. Now, whether that's a good thing or not, whether we did the right thing or not, that's still debatable. Everybody's talking about that. But again, the left has gone off their rocker, and they're just saying things that are not true, saying things. Now, I do want to get into this a little bit because for those of you who haven't heard, which I can't. In case you're living somewhere else in the world and you haven't heard the news, President Trump. We were flexing down there. There was a lot of military commentators talking about the kind of power that was being basically paraded around the country of Venezuela, air, sea, and land, all over the place. They were doing all kinds of flying around with some big heavy iron. Heavy stuff, aircraft carrier, all kinds of things. Now, you have to look back at, you have to understand the dynamics of what was going on in Venezuela. Hugo Chavez was down there for a long time as the leader, the dictator, and he basically handed off the country to, I don't know if Hugo Chavez, is he still alive? I can't remember if he's still alive or not. he handed it off to Maduro. So, Nicolas Maduro, old Saint Nick, he handed it off to him, and he has made it worse. Venezuela has more oil reserves, more oil in the ground than Saudi Arabia. And you look at Saudi Arabia and see the wealth that is there because of the way they have exploited their resources and just the, you know, what they've been able to do with that. The entire nation is very wealthy, and everybody there gets a stipend of the wealth coming from the oil rigs. I think, I can't remember the numbers, but I know that I think it's 318 million barrels a day is what they're pumping right now, or maybe it's 100 million. I can't remember what it is. It's a ridiculous amount of oil per day that they're processing in Saudi Arabia. The Venezuela is 18% of what they were at the time before Hugo Chavez took over. Now, you'll hear the leftists say that what happened there was that Hugo Chavez and Maduro, they have taken the oil reserves, the money from the oil, and they're giving it to people so that they have a living wage. So they're providing it to the people. The wealth of the oil is being provided to people so that they have a livable wage. They're giving it back to the poor. You know, the old Robin Hood mentality that we always hear about. This kind of thing where they're stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. And that whole story is all part of that whole thing. That's the whole process that people try to equate themselves to, or equal themselves to, align themselves with. And it's all a lie. There are people there. I listen to people who are from Venezuela or are very and are still closely connected to Venezuela. Venezuelans, for the most part, by and large, in this country, are not upset. In fact, they were anti-Trumpists. People who hate Trump are not upset about what has happened down in Venezuela. They still love their country. You're always going to, when you immigrate from another country, you might love this country with all your heart, but you still have a thing to your homeland. I don't live in my home state. I don't live in my hometown. I don't live in the town I was born in. And yet I still have this affinity to, I'm from there. That's kind of where I'm from. I like to go back and visit there. It's kind of my hometown. There's still a root there that I still like to go back and visit. And I think that's important. Now I don't expect where I'm living to be like that. I'm living where I'm living because that's where I choose to live. If I really wanted to go back to that, I'd go back and live where I lived before. I don't. I'm living where I'm living. So that's the way that works. Now, having said that, if my hometown was having problems, I would be concerned about that. And here, there's some people who, and I'd like to play some audio from this. If I get a chance, I may do this either today or I might do it some other time. However, I apologize for the coughing. I don't have a way to mute myself when I cough on this particular machine with my laptop here. We have what has happened here. There's a bigger story behind all this. So yes, there's the oil, there's the narco-terrorism, there's all that stuff. I think. The drug issues were just part of this whole thing. The fact that we confiscated some of the oil rigs, the oil ships, I should say, the tankers that were moving out of the country and going to places that were sanctioned, that weren't supposed to receive. They were going against the sanctions, the international sanctions. We confiscated some of the, I think two or three of the oil tankers that were going out, and then of course we're blowing up drug boats. Started with that, ended up being the oil thing, and now all of a sudden it turns kind of overnight. Nobody expected it, nobody saw it coming, which is the way it needs to be done. You can't give a whole bunch of warning about this kind of thing. And of course, the Democrats are all upset that they were not briefed on this. We weren't briefed on this. We had no idea. We just woke up to this and found out that we took Maduro last night. Yeah, well, if we would have told you, he would have found out about it, and he probably would have went into hiding because somehow there's some kind of weird connection about telling a Democrat. And then all of a sudden, some communist finds out about it. We don't know how that happens. I'm not sure how that, you know, it's such a strange coincidence that that always happens that way. So we ended up with this, this thing, woke up to this thing the other day. And of course the Democrats are crazy because they're going off their rocker saying, and there's some Republicans also saying that this was an illegal action and we shouldn't have done this. You know, the president doesn't have the authority to do this. So he declared war. We didn't declare war. We're not at war with Venezuela. We're certainly not at war with the Venezuelan people. This was a dictatorship that was unrecognized. The Biden administration put a bounty on his head of $50 million. Put a bounty on his head. If someone would have killed him, we would have paid them $50 million. That's an assassination. We're paying for a hitman. That's what that amounts to. Now, we didn't hire a specific hitman, but if someone would have killed him, we'd have paid him. Well, how does that work? How is that any different than hiring a hitman? We didn't. President Trump could have just gone and assassinated the guy. Didn't do that. He's going to hold him, you know, try to hold him to some kind of justice. Now, I think we should do the same thing with some mayors or some governors in this country. Mayors too, I guess. Hold them accountable. Going in the middle of the night, take them in and take them to court. Ironically, they took Maduro to a New York court system. So he's right in the town, and Mamdani's there. Now, this is getting back to this whole thing with Mamdani. Mamdani, he had this big press conference. I think it was day two of his mayorship or whatever, day three, whatever he's on now. I think his mayorship started on January 1st, so he's in day five. He's day five. Day five, mayor, Mamdani. Bus prices. bus prices in New York City now have gone up, by the way, because of a vote to increase prices. He couldn't do anything about it. Buses are going to be fast and free. Yeah, well, they're not. They've gone up in price. Yeah, see how that works out for him. A whole lot of promises, and of course, he's going to blame it on somebody. He's going to blame it on Hochul. He's going to blame it on who knows what. Now, the issue is Mamdani came out with this big statement. I let the president know about my opposition to the opposition. I made an opposition. He just goes on. I'd like to play the audio for that. I'm going to try to compile some of this for later in the week. We have plenty of time, hopefully, this week to get some of this done. He has this. he goes on with this big, long statement about how I opposed, you know, he could just come out and say, I called the president and told him that I opposed, the Maduro thing. It took him 20 minutes to say that, basically. And then he goes, a reporter said, what was the president's response? Well, I voiced my opposition and then we ended it at that. In other words, President Trump said, so what? Okay, thanks for the call. Thanks for wasting my time. Good for you. Good for you. It's see you later. Yeah, it's none of your business. Run New York City. Get New York City working again. I'm sure in President Trump's mind he's thinking, why don't you make New York City great again and let me deal with the country? Now, there's a little thing called the Monroe Doctrine, and it's not something that's in the Constitution. It's not something that's necessarily part of MAGA. It's not necessarily something that's part of, I would say, conservative non-interventionist mentality. However, the Monroe Doctrine was a little bit beyond non-interventionism. However, there was this idea that, yes, we want to be non-interventionist, but we also want to protect and defend our hemisphere, which is basically the West, I guess you might call it. So we have, now when you get down to South America, we're kind of getting out of our region here, I think, a little bit. However, you have to understand what's going on here. We've got Cuba. We have a couple other countries within South America, Central South America. We're basically being overrun and run by other entities outside of their countries. Even if the cartels in Mexico are being run basically by, they're dealing with trafficking products that are from other countries. And China is one of the biggest ones. China, and of course there's others out there, but Russia is also part of this whole thing. Now, I would like to propose this idea that, and I think this has not been widely talked about, but I think you have to understand what this is about. I have a, uh, let's just say this. I believe that the Russia-Ukraine war is going to be over very shortly. I would bet that a peace agreement will be decided on by the end of the month, by the end of January. It may be a little longer than that. Some details may need to be worked out. I know that there have been some progress earlier on this. However, with this whole thing with Maduro, there's an issue here. The oil. The oil is the issue. However, here's what happened. The people of Venezuela were basically it was a very prosperous country at one point, with the oil sales and everything that was going on there. Very small part of the population was poor, that you would consider in poverty. Almost everybody's in poverty there now. This one lady who works with giving aid to folks there in Venezuela, the general sense is among almost, from what I understand, about 80% of the people there, is this general sense of relief. The only people that are not relieved of this whole thing are the people who are working for Maduro. And it's so now I'm not going to get into whether it's right or wrong for us to have gone in there, how I feel about it. I'm going to talk about that at the end here, maybe if I have time. However, at this point, the people of Venezuela, how the Venezuela people feel about it, they're very much relieved. The folks who were Maduro's thugs, people who were kind of the criminal agency behind this whole thing, they were running this whole thing, they're the ones that are not very relieved right now. They're pretty upset. They're pretty, you know, they're, you know, the question here is who's in charge of the military? What kind of military does it have? It doesn't really have much of a military down there. It's kind of a joke. Much of their military is basically kind of a showpiece, a paper tiger. Not much there. It doesn't say that they don't have a military. It doesn't say that they aren't. But it's mostly his mobs. Now, this probably is better news for a longer show, but you have to understand what happened when Hugo Chavez took over. There were mostly American oil companies down there. I think there was a British oil company. There was beyond that, there was a lot of other businesses down there, a lot of U.S.-owned properties, a lot of assets that were U.S.-owned in Venezuela. The issue there became this one of when Hugo Chavez took over, he confiscated all that property. All of the oil well, all the rigs, all the systems, all of the property that was down there, he seized it all. He took it over. He fired 18,000 people who were working for the oil companies. This is why the thing collapsed to begin with. All the people who knew what was going on, the infrastructure there was pretty old anyway. The problem was they didn't have modern equipment. They had older equipment. This my understanding of this whole thing. Now, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor, and I'm also not an oil, geopolitical oil expert, or whatever you want to call it, commodities expert. My understanding is the oil companies had these people who were down there who were experts, who knew how to keep this machinery going, they knew how to keep the systems going. It's a very delicate balance to be able to get oil out of the ground, get it refined, and make it processed into something that's sellable on the market and get it shipped out of the country. This whole process takes a huge amount of time, not just something that just anybody can do. And of course, when they fired all these people because they were pretty much loyalists to the old regime and to the oil companies that were running the place, basically saying you can't do it this way, or they were saying no, they basically just fired them all. Most of them left the country. Now at that point, you're left with nobody, people who don't know how to manage things, how to keep things running. This is why they're only running at 18% capacity compared to what their peak was back when Hugo Chavez first took over. This is why they can't keep things going. People are receiving food boxes every week from the government, and they may or may not get those food boxes, and sometimes those food boxes are held over their heads if they don't comply with everything that the government wants them to do. So you have to meet up with certain obligations in order to get the food box, and you may not get it because they just may not have a chance. The process is so dependent on the government at this point. Now you would think that the These people who are standing in the streets talking about how great things were down there, well, why didn't they just move down there if things were so great down there? Now, people were eating anything they could find. There's not much in terms of wildlife left down there because of people just keep eating everything. There were times there for several months there were people just starving, just leaving. And then there had been so many refugees from that area that had just left because they just couldn't stay there. They couldn't afford it. They had literally migrated, just walked out of the country. So that just the whole idea of this thing that the country was this some kind of a utopia before, you know, under this I would call it Chavez / Maduro regime. Maduro was worse there was an election, and in that election, it was made very very clear that the opposition won and Maduro stayed in. He just didn't allow him to take office. These are the kind of things that they claim President Trump is going to do. It was that he did, or he's never going to leave office. And yet this guy did it, and they're still think this guy's wonderful. Just the kind of hypocrisy here that we see in terms of the way they operate with things like this. Now, this is such a heavy heavy thing within the Venezuelan economy. They have a huge amount of wealth there. Now, this is you have to understand, they have, I think it's at 1.5 million ounces, I think, of gold. I can't remember how, there's a bunch of gold. My numbers are a little bit fuzzy because I've heard it last Saturday. I haven't had a chance to really memorize the numbers. But London, basically the UK, London has sanctioned, or I should say seized, since 2018, they have basically seized access to, or I said barred access to a bunch of gold that they have there, and because they're claiming that the government of Venezuela is not legitimate, and they don't know who should have access to this gold because of the old. So there's a whole bunch of gold being withheld by the British government, and that's something that not many people know that. Not many people realize that. But there's a whole bunch of assets being frozen because of the assets that were frozen from Britain. In other words, they came in and stole a bunch of property, basically seized a bunch of property, appropriated it, that was owned by probably British Petroleum, I would imagine, and some other British companies, or a lot of British companies. Whenever an oil company goes into, like when you saw the fracking going on, especially in the North and in the Midwest, I said up in Dakota areas, you know, there was a huge companies that came in and were doing the fracking. There were so many businesses also around that, and workers that came in around that industry. You got to feed those people. You got to have all kinds of, you know, you got to have housing. You have to have all kinds of things for all these. There was a name for the folks. It's called leatherback. What were they called? What do they call them? The folks that come in and do the work. They kind of come in temporary. They travel in to do temporary work, and they make a fortune doing it. They might make 100 grand in just a few months. Just very heavy, hard work, you know, working 12 hours, 16 hours a day. And then you work 7 days a week and you just do that like crazy for a while. And just crazy thing. That's what's happening. This is the kind of thing that was, that happens around that kind of an industry, is you get workers, you get infrastructure, you get all kinds of other things that support those. Sometimes when a business comes in and says, we're going to have 500 jobs in this company, well, those 500 jobs are now going to supply other supporting jobs and businesses that are going to probably total about three or four times that. So you're going to have 2,000 jobs because of the 500 jobs that come into the area because of that industry being there. You have delivery trucks. You have all kinds of other things that, you know, the supply and all the maintenance, everything that happens has to go on with, you know, the infrastructure around that business, around that what's happening there. Those businesses are now booming because of the workers that are there, because of the infrastructure that's there. Now, how do I feel about it? I'm not sure. I'm still not sure. I don't like the idea of intervention. However, if we are going to intercede, if we're going to intervent like this, I would rather it be this way than to have a forever war start like we had in Iraq, where we come in and just completely topple something and mess it up. This is not a we're going in bombing. My understanding is we're facilitating a secure situation to get a new government installed. And they're going to work with the people of Venezuela and make sure that everything's secure there. That's my understanding. In the meantime, let me know what you think about what I think. And if you are from Venezuela or if you have any comments about it, let me know. 812-379-8778. And you can leave a message or a text message there. You can send a text as well. Or go to google.com/voice and leave your message there on that 812-379-8778. And type it in. I might respond. I might play your message on the air. Who knows? God bless. Have a great and wonderful week. Happy New Year. I'll talk to you later. See you.